Yeah, right now.
All right. I'm bringing to order this meeting of the Ocala Police Officer Retirement System Board of Trustees meeting. Today's date is February 8, 2016. Time is now approximately 1:13 p.m. My name is Mike Summer. I'm the treasurer, acting as chairman until such time as Matt Stankman arrives. Have everybody introduce themselves, starting with the immediate right.
Doug Shively, board member.
Brian Creedle, board member.
Larry Cole, consultant, investment consultant.
Kim Calhoun, Westwood Trust.
Lee Diener, attorney.
Alicia Gaither.
Jessica Connor.
And Dale Adams.
All right, first order of business is reviewing minutes from the previous meeting of January 11, 2016.
Excuse me, Mike, I believe Dale has a request to amend the agenda.
Oh, yeah, on the second item of our agenda, I had a list approving the benefits for Officer Mary Bruton. I would like to request an amendment to the agenda to also add two additional members whom I met with today, Robin Ford and Leonard Briggs. Do we need a motion for that?
Yes.
Make a motion to amend the agenda. I'll second.
Please. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So now we'll go backwards to the meeting.
Okay.
the minutes of the January 11th special meeting that we had.
I'll move we accept the minutes. I'll second the motion.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, let's do some draw.
Those are real. All right, our first one's from Mary Bruton. She elected to enter the drop as of December 1st, 2015, after about 17 and a third years of service. She elected to take the 25% lump sum and also the 10-year guarantee with 120 payments guarantee. The lump sum is $94,610.55 and her monthly benefit is $21,76.55.
I move we approve the drop for Mary Bruton.
I second the motion.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Three of them.
Robin Ford, I met with her just this morning, and she has elected to go into the end of the drop as of February 1st, after completing just a little over 25 years of service. And she has elected to take no lump sum with a 10-year guarantee of 120 payments, with a monthly payment of $7,104.30.
I'll move we approve the drop for Robin Ford.
Second motion.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Pass.
And then last but not least is Leonard Briggs, another officer that I met with this morning. And He elected to go into the drop on February 1st as well, and with just over 25 years of service. And he elected no lump sum with a retirement for his lifetime with 50% continued to employ annuitant, with his payment of 55, 75, 85, and then the amount continued to the joint annuitant being 50% of that.
I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries 3-0. You ready?
No. Well, that was perfect timing. You bet.
That was good.
Was he calling you?
Yeah, he's supposed to call.
It cuts off in a minute. Or were you doing a conference bridge and he was supposed to?
Yeah, we've got a board member who is
you know what's that? Is that right here? One that be right.
Go ahead. Oh. I'm sure for a long time.
It will. Unless I get promoted. It'll end up being more than me.
That's because of the traffic homicide.
On call and
yeah, he's been in hospitalized or in rehab for about 2 years.
No way. Oh, bless his heart.
Was it hips?
Let's wait a couple of minutes. You can go ahead, Kim.
Okay. All righty. Well, I have got the blue books, and I've got one. Should I give everyone one? I usually have extras, but yep, we got a couple. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. I'm Kim Calhoun. Been with Westwood. I will celebrate my 20th anniversary in October, so pleased to be here with you guys. Today is the 8th, not the 3rd. I don't know how we got that on the book, but we stuck with it. We had probably 20 sets of eyes on it throughout this and missed that, but happy to be here on the 8th day of February.
Excuse me, Kim.
Yes, sir.
Just for the record, I note that this says not for public distribution.
Right.
And we're all clear of the fact that this will be public record.
Yes.
And somebody can request
yes.
to receive it.
That is correct. And I've asked our compliance group about that, if I could take that. Obviously, it's a client book, so, and I'll follow through with that again, but yes, perfectly fine with this being public record. There's nothing confidential in here. We do work with some funds where we pay out their benefits, and we don't include those materials for that reason. But, so what I have for you guys is just a quick update on Westwood. Happy to answer any questions on what's going on with the firm, and then a review on large cap and MLP. And I would ask you guys certainly just to ask questions throughout the presentation. Larry, if you can tee me up, I think that would be helpful. Just for an open discussion. And as far as time, what kind of time do you all have for me?
Just what you need.
Okay, gotcha. Well, on page 3, this overview of Westwood really tried to serve as an update of the firm. As of the end of December, we just had our earnings call last week, so updated our assets under management. Again, had the earnings call. So we now stand at $20.8 billion in assets under management, 168 employees. So that's changed considerably since the last time I was out here. As you'll recall, we're a public company. The company was actually founded in 1983 by Susan Byrne, focused on value investing. Large cap is our flagship strategy. Over time, we've really built up that U.S. value franchise. That's the team that's managing your assets in Dallas. I've got that listed in the middle of the page. So the U.S. value team, again, located in Dallas, focusing on the entire value continuum. So we've got analysts who focus on particular sectors, particular industries, and they are looking for companies to buy up and down the market cap spectrum. These are also, it's the group that is part of the group that's working on your MLP team as well. We've got a global and EM team that's located in Toronto, and we've got a global convertibles team that's located in Boston. So that's really what really pumps up those numbers as far as who we are. We just won, again, Best Places to Work. We were announced again this year as one of the best places to work. So that's 2014 and 2015 that we were awarded that. On page 4, just to show you what those different assets are, so that to give you a better feel for what the team is doing, at the top of page 4, the U.S. value team, you can see the different strategies that we're managing along U.S. equities, and on the right-hand side, the master limited partnership, so the strategy that we're managing for you all, as well as a couple of different flavors that we have in MLPs and in an income opportunity strategy. And the reason that I bring that up is we've got 18 fundamental analysts at the shop in Dallas that are feeding ideas up to our teams. And as we talked about MLPs, really our approach is not just the asset class in a vacuum, but what feeds that demand, supply, the different factors that really affect the MLP asset class. I would note that 4 of those strategies, U.S. equities, master limited partnerships, single exception of our income opportunity strategy, we did outperform our relative benchmarks for 2015 in all of those strategies. One last thing I would note, not on the page, but just of interest to Dale and Alicia, is that we have upgraded our system. We've changed trust accounting systems. We've moved to FIS, that platform. It's been a little painful, I think, in the start. It's new online access. The statements are in a different place. It's been a little difficult to find. But if you guys have any problems, feel reach out to me. And also Michelle Neighbor, whom I work with, she's fantastic about getting back. So if you guys have any problems, please let me know. And then I would just say also, I appreciate you guys updating your info with your email addresses, but what we're doing is, as we have articles of interest, we're going to send that out to you guys and let you filter that back out to the board so that we're not inundating everyone. To move forward to you guys on page 5, so the idea here is really just to boil everything down to one single executive summary. So we are Westwood Trust. We're managing both large cap value and master limited partnerships for the fund. The benchmark there is the Russell 1000 value for large cap and the Alerian MLP index for the MLP strategy. As far as the inception dates, our performance start date, we actually funded, or you guys funded, large cap in February of 2009. We use a clean start date of March 1st on that strategy, and the same with MLP, that funded in October, but we're using an 11-1 start date. So for the full relationship in that middle section, since inception information, initially funding large cap with just over $5.2 million, over this time period, so what's gone in and out of large cap and the funding of MLP, net-net, it's $560,000 that's gone out of the account. So if we look at a current market value of both strategies as of the end of the year, $12.6 million, what that equates to is since inception, investment earnings of almost $8 million in the fund since 2009. Client service team, it's myself and Amy Lester, who I thought I would bring with me today, but she was just here. She was just in Florida. She came in for the trustees school in Orlando, and I guess she figured that was enough in a 7-day period, just one trip. Page 6.
She really didn't want to come here.
I would have had her drive, that's for sure. Page 6, again, we don't have specific guidelines for you guys. Wouldn't be happy to take a look at that. You're invested in commingled funds, so we're somewhat limited on what we could do. But if you guys do have some guidelines you can share with us for those specific asset classes, I'm happy to include that on that review. But if we look at what's happened in the strategy, so what I have for you all is we'll look at performance over the various periods, really look at attribution, what drove performance of the asset class. And over that period, I'm looking at the last year, looking at 2015, and then we can take a look at how the portfolios are currently positioned as of the end of the year. But just kind of thinking back on 2015, the real story, if we look at what happened first quarter, second quarter, really pretty mild in the market, but third quarter, as we rolled out in August and China devalued their currency, then the concern became on Chinese growth and ultimately what that means for global growth. And then, you know, the repercussion of that and really investor sentiment even affected our Fed, where we decided not to raise rates, which had kind of been teed up that we would see that in the third quarter. That was actually halted in the third quarter, so roll forward to the fourth quarter, and you can see the performance returns of the different indices and what that means for the full year. Really, in the fourth quarter, saw that crude prices did rebound a little bit, but ultimately, you know, that fell again. If you look at these indexes and look at what happened in the fourth quarter, you can see very positive in the quarter, slightly positive for the year overall. We saw domestic stocks outperforming international. What you don't see on this page, but I'm sure you'll see it in Larry's numbers, is growth outperforming value. Very dramatic, that dispersion between growth and value. But we did see bonds, you know, slightly positive for the year. But crude oil, that's so dramatic. It really affects, obviously, your MLP portfolio, but other parts of your portfolio as well. Crude down 18% in the quarter, down 30% for the year. So really dramatic there. You know, what we saw is OPEC not cutting production, the announcement that Iran would come on, the sanctions would be lifted and they would be able to export in 2016. All of those fed very negative news that affected the quarter. So if you guys want to take a look, the way I've got this separated, it's a review of large cap first, and then we'll go into MLP. I figure that's where you wanted to spend most of your time. On page 9, so I've got fourth quarter performance. Your portfolio up 6% for the quarter, ahead of the benchmark, about 50 basis points. And in year to date, we eked out slightly positive return, and the Russell 1000 value negative, minus 3.8% for the year. And you saw on the previous page, the S&P was up slightly, a 1.8% for the year, and that really feeds into what I was talking about, value versus growth. It's more of a core benchmark, has more of a growth bias to it, but strong performance for us there. The one-year number, that's the same that I'm reporting there. The three-year number ahead of the benchmark, five-year slightly ahead as well. We're still trailing since inception, and if you think back to that start date, March 1st of 2009, really that strong rally, we underperform in really strong bull markets where it's a risk-on type environment. But when we move into periods like we've seen, really the past 18 months where fundamentals do matter again, and you do, active managers do win by picking high quality companies, that's where our strategy does outperform. Larry will probably show you some information how we look relative to peers, and we've done very well over these past few periods. So any market value as of the end of the year, a little over $10 million in your large cap portfolio. Any questions on that? We've got a breakdown on page 10 just to show you what this means, where that performance came from. And again, this is just looking at the one-year period, so 2015. Throughout the presentation, your portfolio will be the blue bars, and the benchmark is represented by the gray bars. So this is showing by sector the average weight of your portfolio relative to the benchmark. That middle section is showing the return of the stocks in that particular sector for your portfolio. Gray would be the benchmark. And the total effect is really that interaction. How did we do on an allocation basis? Did we make the right decisions from an allocation standpoint? And how did we do in a stock selection? So if I could just walk you through a couple of these. And I would say that if you look at total effect on the right-hand side, we outperformed 7 of the 10 sectors. So that 440 basis points that we outperformed the index, you know, it really comes from 7 of those sectors. So technology, we've got a slight underweight, but you can see really, really strong performance. So anytime that the blue bar goes past the gray bar in this particular chart, we did better. So strong performance there. A couple of names, Amdocs, which is a company that does the cell phone billing, the very complex cell phone bill that you get that breaks that down. They've got all of the contracts with the big providers, AT&T, Verizon. That was a big player there, as was Skyworks. What they're really focusing on is the amplification of the signal. So they did really well in the year. So total effect, really strong for us. Energy, and I bring this to your attention because we're going to look at energy, the negative effect in the next portfolio. But what you see is we're underweight and our stocks did better. So really where we outperformed here and where it was additive on a relative basis is that we were in high quality companies with good balance sheets and good basins. And it just kind of carries throughout. Consumer staples, healthcare, I'd say that we benefited from a couple of names in the news there. Cigna announcing that it was going to buy out WellPoint. There's a bid by WellPoint, and then Aetna acquiring Humana. You know, that worked very well for us. Where we underperformed in REITs, we've been underweight REITs and utilities in your portfolio for quite some time. It's really those bond proxies that we think are overvalued. So we've been underweight. That's hurt us. It hurt us in REITs, did not hurt us in the portfolio for utilities as we had positive selection in this particular area. But that's kind of the way you can see how the portfolio is structured. That's how we've had it structured. I have some buys and sells, but I can kind of tie that in if you guys want to look. On page 12, this is how the portfolio looks as of the end of the year. So same thing, blue bars are your portfolio. This is showing the weighting of the stocks within the particular industry sectors of your portfolio. Gray would be the benchmark. And you can see really where our overweights and underweights are. I would caution you that we are a bottom-up fundamental manager. So what we're doing is looking for the best companies and allocation to the particular sectors is really a fallout of security selection. But where we're finding value, you can see in the consumer area, really trying to focus there. If you think about low energy prices, the consumer has benefited from that. So we're finding some value there in the consumer area. Underweight energy, as I've mentioned, underweight REITs and utilities. Those are further to the right-hand side. Where we're trying to get some of that yield that we're losing from REITs and utilities would be in the healthcare area. These companies typically pay a high dividend, but they've got growth prospects as well. When we look forward, kind of an outlook piece of, we do think that earnings will slow year over year. Earnings growth profit is going to be difficult for companies. And what the market will pay up for is growth, so visibility of growth. And that's really where we're trying to focus your portfolio on, are companies that we can see that earnings growth. Do you guys have any questions on any of those particular names? Gotcha. And then the rest of this is just really, the characteristics that you see here, proving out what I've said about that we're focusing on high quality companies that can really grow faster than the market. You can see that on our cash flow margin that was listed here, free cash flow yield at the bottom of the page, the returns on equity, returns on invested capital, debt, the net debt to cap. So just high quality companies, how the strategy is done over time. And then we get into MLPs. So any questions on large cap? Anything there, Larry?
No.
Gotcha. MLP. So what you'll see is we did outperform for the year, although this isn't one that you're proud of. The index was down 32%. We're down slightly, slightly less than that. So very difficult year. In the quarter, down 1%. Year to date, we're down 31.6% versus the benchmark, down 32%. Over time, your portfolio, so we've had some good performance. We had a really strong end in 2013, had some strong numbers in 2014 before crude fell off the... I've got a chart to show you what what crude price did over that time period, but down 10.7 versus the index down 13.8. So about $2 million that we've got invested in MLPs. So I've got some charts. I had to break out my glasses. I don't know why we decided to put four busy charts on one page, but really what we're trying to illustrate here is what happened. What happened in 2015 and... Exactly. Hey, we saw that on the first page, right? Yeah. We didn't need a chart.
I couldn't need a chart to tell me that.
Yeah.
But really, you know, as energy prices, energy companies fell off, you know, the access to capital is really came into question. What this chart is showing you here is on high yield energy companies, the credit spreads really widening, really hurting these companies as their access to capital, you know, was impaired. This is what I was talking about. So this tiny chart on the top right-hand side, oil and natural gas prices, this goes back to January 2014. Crude is the blue line throughout the chart, so we're roughly $100. You can see if you go forward in this chart, where we peaked in oil prices, June, July of 2014, oil at $107. You can see the dramatic fall off here. And really that looking at the Thanksgiving decision, you can kind of see that November, December. This is when the Saudis had the meeting and they decided it's over the Thanksgiving time period and we're not cutting production. This is our game. We're going to keep pumping this out. We own this. It's our market share. And crude continued to fall and continued to fall. And that's really when the MLPs really fell from that time period. So they're down over this time period roughly 53% over this time period. It's been very dramatic. I believe I've got a chart in here that'll show you the last time that we saw this was 2008, when we saw a dramatic fall off in MLPs. The difference between, there are several differences, and one thing is the fall off in, it was so dramatic and it fell so fast. What we've seen here is just the magnitude. It's just gone on for so long and it's been so dramatic, the fall off of energy prices. And one of the things that when we looked at, while we bought the asset class was the low correlation to other asset classes, low correlation to oil prices. And what we've seen is once oil hit a certain dollar figure, whether that was $80 or $50, correlations go to one, everything has fallen off. And just what we talked about, you know, earlier today, looking at what the market has done, oil is driving the market. Everything is following suit. So you can kind of see that on this very busy chart, bottom left-hand side. These are different energy indices. So the AMZ, which is your MLP index, that's the blue line that goes throughout the chart. If we look over this period, it's the second to the bottom. It's the second to the worst. The overall energy index is the red line throughout. So even oilfield services have done better than MLPs, and we wouldn't expect that. E&Ps have done worse, so the exploration and production companies, they've done worse, and we would certainly expect that as production has gone offline. But what we think is that the fundamentals of MLPs and what they are doing as far as pipelines and the carry-through capacity, the price action has not followed fundamentals. We think the fundamentals are still in place for MLPs. I've got a couple of charts, hopefully that can show you this. This is another ugly thing that happened in the marketplace. Flows pretty much dried up. This is showing historic flows into the MLP asset class. And it's really dried up. You know, and when we look at what we would expect in January is that we would get a bounce back. January is typically a strong month. For one thing, we saw a lot of tax loss selling in December. It's a distribution month. MLPs only pay out their distributions quarterly. So when they announce distributions, typically it's a strong quarter for the asset class. Also look at companies have reported and it hasn't been that bad. We've seen a little bit of revisions, but it has not been that bad. We think that would have helped. And again, January typically being a strong month, but that's not been the case. Looking at the dispersion of returns, this is another busy chart, at least we got it bigger for you, on page 19. But this is the index. So this is the Alarion Index. It's 50 members within the index. And you can see just the large dispersion of returns. So the overall index down 32%. You see that, that's the red bar, kind of in the middle of the chart. But Valero, in this case, you know, was up almost 22%. And the worst performer, wrote this down on another page. I got this somewhere. Down 75%. What is that? But just really strong, but for the overall part, I mean, just very negative. What we think, again, some of the data here about fundamentals not following price action. If you look at, so I'm on page 20. So these are estimate revisions. If we look at one of these that we've highlighted for you in the diversified area, so enterprise products, EPD, it's one of the largest MLPs. Down 25% for the full year. If you look at what the street revisions have been for 2015, so a revision down 7%, same for 2016, go out to 2017, just 4%. I mean, not a strong downward revision. Earnings growth, however, though, 8%, going out 7%. I mean, pretty positive, but yet a stock that's punished down 25%. And you can kind of go throughout some of these. It's pretty, you know, unfairly punished, if you will, if you look at these companies. As far as an outlook, we don't think that the infrastructure story is over. We've still got while production is cut, there's still a lot of oil in the ground. There's still a lot of natural gas. Valuations are very attractive. That makes sense. Obviously, they've been punished so severely. So when we look at the yields, we look at the distribution growth, you know, they are still very attractive. Where we're focusing is high quality companies. We're focusing on the core basins. So if you look at natural gas, we want to be in the Marcellus. There's still overcapacity there. The takeaway, they can't take away natural gas fast enough from the Marcellus. Looking at crude, the areas where we want to be in, the Permian Basin, out in West Texas, the Niobrara in Colorado, those are very attractive areas. The Bakken, though, contrastly, the price of getting oil out of the ground in the Bakken, I think, is $70 a barrel. It's very expensive. So we've really moved away from pipelines and gathering and processing facilities that are in those high-cost basins.
Along that line, though, Kim, I read just about, I want to say it was 3 or 4 months ago, there was a Bloomberg article that came out that indicated that over half of the companies, though, in the Bakken now can make a profit with oil in the mid-30s.
Oh, wow.
So the technology and the cost of pulling it out of the ground, the holes are already dug, the drill, you know, the...
Right.
It's coming down kind of quick up there, but it has been hit harder than the other regions.
It has. And that's one of the things. So when we look at production, you know, you just can't shut these things down. Those rigs don't just shut on a dime. So as we look at production, that's really one of the positive outlooks for the asset class, is that production, as it slows, it's about mid, late 2016, that as that production that comes back in line with demand, that really will be the inflection point for when we're really going to see, you know, crude prices come back up, MLPs, you know, starting to see, you know, movement there. As we said, there was an article that came out in Barron's over the weekend talking about, wow, does oil go to $20? I mean, it's not that far to go
from here. There's been about six oils, that's six things that say that what you just said was not going to happen in 2016.
That's
not going to go back up. That the glut is there and it's going to remain there.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. The angle pump it when it's just the Saudis and now the Iranians and everybody else are putting it out there, they can afford it. Texas guys can't afford it.
It's, you know, one of the things also that this low price has created is a lot of demand. I mean, we've all talked about, you know, gas is cheaper, so people are doing things that they wouldn't do. Refiners obviously benefit from the cheaper oil. So they're definitely refining, you know, got to store this somewhere. So the storage facilities, you know, are doing okay there. But demand, the estimates, so I will say, for every negative, there is a positive. You know, you will see that. I'm sure that there are six people that are talking about, you know, if you see six people talking negatively, then you've got six, conversely, that think that it will come back online. But demand should ramp back up as supply comes back down. Did some work, our energy group presented it to us recently. And so, for example, the concern of Iran, what is that going to mean? How many, you know, barrels can they bring on? Well, a lot of that, you know, people think that a lot of that production, they've been doing it. That's been in the Iraq numbers, you know. So, and that Saudi pretty much is that they're pumping at full capacity, that they can't produce that much more. So.
Of course, the flip side of that is the slowing global economy. Everybody's focused on China. I think that's where most of the articles come out about oil not coming back, usually are related to China's growth. So, kind of a tough call right now. The Barron's article came out. The Barron's article is actually bearish, but yet bullish for the end of the year. But bearish in the shorter term. But they also were the ones who predicted that it would fall to $75 a barrel just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That's what they said the bottom was. Kind of take these articles for what they're worth, I guess, at this point.
And that's the problem I have with the entire thing right now, is nobody can give anybody any kind of straight answer, and the experts don't agree.
Well, they rarely do. That's what makes markets. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, there's some strange things going on, I guess, too. There's more discussion about it because, as Kim pointed out, the 100% correlation between the stock market now and oil, price of oil. That's what's driving the markets right now. So oil goes down, markets go down. I don't know which one's leading which, but that's what's happening right now. And, you know, we usually don't see that. You certainly don't usually see the correlation of these pipeline guys with the commodity price. That's the strange part, because the oil is still, volumes aren't down all that much yet. Now, will they go down lower? Probably. But as you look at the fundamentals, and I'm not ready to buy any more right now because of the volatility, and so I'm not going to be recommending you buy any more. I'm also not going to be recommending you get out of it. Because when you look at
You scared me on January.
No. The oil supply.
You scared me in January.
Yeah, well, we're still looking at it, and there will probably be a time when you'll probably still think I'm nuts, but because I'll probably still come in and get us back up to the target at some point. But most of the shorter-term forecasts, and we're kind of in that camp, is that there's going to be pressure on oil prices here for the near term. But what happens after that? You know, the supply chain, when you talk about the difference, I don't mean to jump into your stuff here, but when you jump into the oversupply that's here right now, that could be impacted overnight. If you take a map of all the refineries over in the Saudi area or in the Mideast in period, if somebody just got nuts and bombed one of them, which I think Putin's getting pretty close to doing because he can't survive much longer at $30 a barrel oil. That overnight you could probably literally see oil go up, you know, 50%. And the reason, and the evidence behind that is just, it's either last week or week before, there were just rumors that Putin and the Saudis were talking about possibly cutting production, and oil rallied 14% in 2 days.
Which is ridiculous in and of itself. That's why I think my problem is the whole thing is madness right now. And madness scares me.
Well, the only thing I would say as far as the portfolio goes, Mike, is first of all, you don't have a very high percentage allocated to it. Second, you had one year where you made 37%. You had one year where you lost, you know, more than that. So since you had the money in that asset class, you lost about 10, I think her numbers showed, since inception. Obviously not something we recommend.
Right.
But
Well, it's bad when you look at something and it loses in 75% of the time.
But if I sit here and look at, you know, 3 years down the road, do I think you're going to be happy you either held at these levels or even nibbled in? And then I think the answer is yes, I still do. Because I don't think that American Energy story is over. And remember what you're invested in. You're invested in the pipeline and the storage, not the commodity itself. Historically, that's mattered. In the last few months, it hasn't. It's moved identical to the commodity. But if that, if oil, and the good news is that the break-even point for a lot of these U.S. drillers has dropped very, very considerably. I mean, it used to be everybody was at $70 to $80 a barrel break-even point, and that's down to in the mid-30s for a whole lot of companies now. So if oil were to go back up into 50, the volumes would pick up again through the U.S. pipelines. Plus, they just passed some recent legislation that, this is where I agree with Kim's people and her analysis, that the fundamentals don't back up the drop that we've seen in the in these types of companies. It's an overreaction to oil prices and the Fed rate hike, I think. But over half of what's, I think the number is 65% or more of what's going through these pipelines is natural gas. By this time next year, we're projected to be a net exporter of natural gas. We're already almost there. We recently, there was legislation passed to make us, to allow us to export oil. So all these variables, that's going to, if it pumped out of the ground, it's got to go from A to B. As long as it's still coming out of the ground, the, you know, the pipelines and the storage facilities should be able to make some money.
So. Yeah, I have some notes. I can't remember who the company is, but they just renegotiated some contracts that were that were commodity linked to the price of the commodity, and they just restructured these contracts on a fixed fee, and it was a higher rate than what they were getting before. So we're going to have to move it. I know it's so painful. It's just awful. I'm not kidding you. We, our performance group sends out, or actually the trading desk sends out a spreadsheet every day. And, oh God, I mean, it is the way that it goes, it's structure shifts, goes from our large caps, mid caps, small cap, and then MLP is about two-thirds of the way down. And every, my eyes just go straight to that, and I just pray for green. It's so painful, and we feel your pain, and I just think that it's going to be a quick snap back too. So as far as don't get out of these levels, you know, you've got that money invested there, stick with it, and it's the insanity of just how the market is all moving together. Based on oil, it's somewhat unprecedented, I think, you know, for this long period of time. As I said, we've got our emerging markets team based out of Toronto. They're not that negative on China. They're actually increasing their allocation to Chinese companies. They don't feel that, you know, while there will be a slowdown in China, and that's right, it's still a huge economy, and it will still matter. So it's tough. I apologize. I mean, the numbers have been tough. I would say how the portfolio is positioned. You can see on page 31. And again, remember, if you look at the landscape for MLPs, you've got the upstream guys. So those are really the exploration and production, getting the commodity out of the ground. The midstream, which is your pipelines, your gatherers, processors. Really the story there, and then you've got the upstream, you know, more the refining, getting it to the end user. All of our focus is on the midstream. That's the area where we think makes sense, where the fundamentals matter. I mean, spreads have widened. When we talk about on a valuation perspective, spreads have widened. We don't think it makes sense this year. There's going to be, as people quit spending and the capital expenditures, you know, kind of dry up, what we're going to see going forward, expect to see 2017, is that investment will come back on and will benefit in future years. So, and Larry, I don't know if you've got any charts. I think in the past you guys had a couple of charts on demand and supply.
Supply demand.
Okay.
I mean, I'm fine with, you know, and I understand what you're saying and everything, but you scared me in January, because I was completely uncomfortable with dumping any more money in.
right now.
Oh, because I said we might?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we might have.
Well, every time you say you might, that generally means we end up doing it. And that was the first time I was like thinking Larry's crazy.
That's so funny.
That's the first time? I've been on this board a long time for that.
No, like really crazy.
Like lost it, crazy.
We work with a big public fund, Missouri Teachers, and we went to see them, it was January the 13th. And, you know, that's what everyone wants is, you know, pound the table, call the bottom, when is it? But they said that their meetings, they have an investment meeting every day, and that's where it starts, is this the day, do we put more money in play, do we put more money in? And they put in $10 million, which is, I mean, that's a lot of money, but not in relation to how big their investment is. But they, you know, they've got a lot of money teed up to continue to put in there.
And like I said, there's a lot of difference between a trader and an investor.
Right.
To me, I really do, especially in pension funds and all, but I'm trying to say, literally look 3 years down the road or more, so we're going to be happy we did what we did today. Because I know, been in this business way too long to know that I'm not, you know, there's a good chance I'm not going to be able to come out the next quarter and it worked, you know. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But, yeah, at this point, though, the volatility has scared us away and the global slowdown. When you start seeing, the reason I'm not recommending it today, there's a lot of reasons, but one of them is you've already got a little over 3% exposure, even after the drop. Europe, Germany, 5-year, and Japan's 5-year, both went negative. So that tells you they're very concerned over there that 5-year bond went negative. Negative view. Brian was just asking me before the meeting, how does that work? I don't know. I assume if you pay a premium for the bond, then you just don't get all your money back. Otherwise, obviously you stick the money under the mattress, right? So that tells you that even though they tried to, their central banks or their feds, if you will, have tried to stimulate the economies, they're not pleased at the results. So this global slowdown may be a little bit more than we think, and not necessarily all related to China. So I'm willing to hold off just a little bit. But production, I noticed on your chart on page 26, that crude oil production 2016 estimate would only be down about 3% for the production side. That's about what we've seen volumes year over year down in the pipelines. So even though the MLPs are down 50% from their peak, the volumes actually going through are not down anywhere near that. So that's one of the reasons why we think the valuation is a little skewed right now. So
are the people that are pipelining this stuff, or the people that are producing the oil, are they going to make that much more money by exporting it?
Well, there's a couple things.
Then get domestic to where we're not a net importer, or we're not as importing as much.
Good question. I'm not sure about the answer to that but I do know that they've already got the holes in the ground and they don't make a dime, if they don't pull it out of the ground. So if they can break even or make a little money, they're going to pull it out. And everything we're seeing and reading, we do visit with the Westwoods, and we actually go out to the Houstons and the Dallas, where you got a lot of this stuff going on in Texas, and visit some of these people that are actually fishing in that pond every day. The technology is improving at a very rapid pace to get this stuff out of the ground. Fracking is what you've heard about, but even within the fracking world, that technology is improving rather dramatically. So it's getting cheaper and cheaper for us to pull it out of the ground. We're not going to match the $15 a barrel Saudi. But again, the Saudis, I don't know how much longer. That's a big question, too. Nobody knows the answer to these questions. They're just they're what's driving the volatility in this market. How long will the Saudis do this? They're getting a lot of pressure, a tremendous amount of pressure from Venezuela is going in the tank. They can't live on $30 a barrel oil. Russia's in a lot of pressure. I think this low oil, everybody might like it going to the gas pump and being able to fill up their cars for these unbelievably cheap prices. But the reality is, I think it's made the world a much more dangerous place, because something is going to happen. Something's going to get. Because all these third world countries that are dependent on commodity prices and dependent on oil are now getting to a desperate level. And like I said, I don't know. You know, Putin, I wouldn't put it past him one bit. He could go bomb a couple refineries and get his economy improved overnight. you'll come up with a good excuse to do it. So that's why, certainly why I wouldn't sell out at these levels, but hopefully we'll see the volatility see a little bottom here and see the volatility slow down, and then I'll come in and you think I'm crazy, I guess. But you're getting 8 or 9% yield on some pretty high quality companies. Now, I like that one chart that Kim had that showed the disparity of the returns with the names that are in the index. The reality is the market hadn't cared too much. It's kind of dumped it all. But hopefully with a manager, active manager like a Westwood, looking at the individual companies, you're not owning the companies that have the highly levered positions that could be impacted by higher rates, although I don't know why rates would go up. I'm confused by that one completely. But and you got the little higher quality companies that are able to make their distributions, meet their cash flow requirements, and have strong balance sheets. So in time, hopefully those will get rewarded. I think they will, but they sure haven't yet. Or they were for a while, but they didn't the last 14 months or 15 months. But I would say hang in there with that. We'll look at the total report and see where your position is, but I would hang tight. It hasn't hurt your overall. You're going to see some good overall numbers, but it's been frustrating for us too, you know. I mean, I've made recommendations that didn't work out right away, but most of them work out. This one hadn't worked out. So
it's just so severe. But thank you guys for sticking with us. And I would say that we've had no outflows. We haven't. This, you know, again, we're working with institutional investors, and they're committed to this space.
Yeah. Well, Larry, I have a question. Part of what you do, I mean, I know you're recommending we stay with the overall company, but if you see these distribution levels with kind of need change, do you contact them to do that? If you see some of the weighted, do you let the company kind of handle that?
As far as where they're putting the money?
Yeah.
No, we don't have any influence at all on which companies they decide to buy or not buy. When we go in though and do our due diligence on a manager, and particularly in this space, when we were doing our research on this, what, 3 or 4 years ago, starting out, and started visiting the Houstons and the Dallases of the world and talking to people that we never had talked to before regarding gas and oil, and what we're looking for are the companies that did focus on the higher quality names. We didn't want to own the index necessarily, unless there was a reason we couldn't own the active manager, but we were going for the companies that would go in and look for the stronger, well-funded companies and higher quality names, and that's, you know, that's what they do. So when we look at, we're evaluating the manager, what they do and how they do it, before we come in and recommend the manager to you. But we don't have any influence at all in what they buy and what they don't buy.
Okay. But for the weighted amounts here, like if you see 37% in natural gas and 40% in crude, you don't? Okay.
What you need to do is start getting the tank companies, because I'm fixing to go buy a bunch of big tanks and I'm going to fill them up.
The storage bins are all getting full. Right? That's where they're storing it over in Europe right now. They don't have any space left, so they're putting it in the tankers.
My mom went and bought 10 more 5-gallon red gas cans, put stable in all of them, took them up there and filled them up with the white gas that she uses for the lawnmowers and the chainsaws and everything. Fill them up now. We got a season's worth of gas sitting there. She's like, I'm gonna buy it while it's this because it's gonna. I'm like,
okay. Now,
see, even your mom knows.
See, if your mom's thinking that, she probably won't be buying these MLPs, and she would be as crazy as me, right? She'd be wanting to invest in these right now. But she knows they're going higher sometimes. We had a couple charts too. I'm not gonna hand them out, but we had the valuation stuff that kind of similar to some of it, similar to what Kim was showing. But the bottom line is that, although this is one of your competitors, there's no doubt they're cheap right now. They're cheaper than they've ever been. So to see the valuations approaching levels of 2008, 2009, when we don't have the financial crisis that we have, that's an argument for buying right now. But again, I'm not willing to subject the portfolio to that any more volatility. Personally, whether you want to go buy it now or not might be a totally different story. that's what I'm here to tell you, but I don't want to subject the portfolio to that kind of risk right now.
Any more questions for Ken? Do you have any other questions?
Nope, that's it. Thank you guys very much.
Hey, Matt.
Hi there. How are you?
Sorry, I'm late.
Oh, great. We get to start over.
No, that's okay. Already done. She didn't say anything
good. So they're cheap.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to say it can't get any worse.
Great. Thank you guys very much. Really do appreciate it.
I know that's tough for you to do.
It is. Gosh. And just so you know, for my own money, I have a lot of money. too. Yeah.
Well, no, this side effect, your large cap value product did very well, so I'll point that out.
Okay.
So your trip won't be a total here.
All right.
Here's the books for
your turn.
This quarter. All right, well, some of my data is probably a little outdated.
Before we do that, there's the third item on the agenda.
Oh, yeah. Is there any public input?
Just a pause. I don't think we have any, so.
Nope, no public.
Well, Matt, you just missed a rather lengthy discussion on MLPs. The good news is they're only about 3% of your portfolio. The bad news is they're down about 38% or 32% or something last year. So. But they were up about 30 the year before, so just hang on, I guess. And that's all.
I'll hang in
there. The rodeo. The report I'm looking at and sharing with you is the December report, and it was a good quarter. You'll see the 3 and the 5 year. A lot of everything on here looks really good, and then the markets have just completely tanked since this report. So with today's big move, we're in bear market territory. Most of them, or some of the major indices anyway, probably down 10% on a year-to-date basis. So if we look through these numbers, just so you know, on this quarter, I would estimate us to be down about 5% for the month of January and the first few days of February here on a total return basis. Bonds are up, convertibles aren't getting hit quite as hard, and so it's kind of a combination. You got real estate portfolio to offset. So I would guess it's probably to be down about 5. That would put us down somewhere, let's see, that would put us down somewhere, let's say, between 2 and 3% on a fiscal year-to-date basis, because you had a good, strong first quarter of your fiscal year, which is what we're looking for. Okay, so keep that in mind as we go through, but we will review the December quarter. If you turn to page 3, that's the start of the checklist or the policy review, where we just kind of go over, make sure we're in compliance with everything. We'll talk about the managers and the performance, but the first section is on performance. You'll see all the boxes are marked yes there, so this is straight out of your investment policy. Are we meeting the over the 3 and 5 year period, are we beating the benchmark, and are we beating the actuarial assumption rate, and are we ranking in the top 50% of a peer group of public pension funds? And the good news there is everything is marked yes. Then we get into the individual managers, which I'll cover. But if you go to page 4 and look at the last section of page 4, that's all compliance. That last section is all compliance oriented. If anything was marked no there, as I've told you in the past, we'd have to change it or fix it. But everything was in compliance as of 12/31. Page 5 are the returns for the quarter 1, 3, and 5 years on a net basis. So this is net of the investment management fees for the quarter, up 3.05%, earned about $1,780,000. The 1 year was actually slightly negative, a little bit ahead of the benchmark, though, even net of fees. 3 years, right on the benchmark, a little over 8, and the 5 years at 7.45 net. The gross number was actually above the 8%. If you go to the allocation on page 6.
I'm sorry, Larry, let me ask you a question. Is what you have on page 2 with where we ranked versus everybody else?
Yes, sir. I was going to cover
that. Yeah. Oh, all right, all right. Well, I was just going to ask, is your not being able to get good accurate numbers affecting that? The BNY stuff.
This is a universe comparison. This doesn't have anything to do with your custody. So these
okay,
numbers.
No, but what I'm saying is no, we're getting good information affecting where you're saying.
No, your rank. It doesn't affect your ranking. It's harder for us to get your report done because we cannot get the numbers.
I didn't know when you were looking at all that stuff and getting that information and getting everything to see where we plug in there.
Yeah. Well. Obviously, we can't compare you to the rest of the world until we know what your returns are, and we do have trouble, as I said in the past, getting all the data we need to get your return done, because the custodian's data has been wrong.
So I was just looking at the jump up, because we've been staying in that 20, 21, but now, you know, that 5-year number going up to 15.
Yeah.
I'm liking that.
Well,
and I'm hoping that's
swing pretty good, you know, when you drop off a bad quarter or something and you pick up a good quarter, so you can have kind of a swing there. So the numbers have been pretty good, though, pretty consistently here the last 2 to 3 years, particularly as far as the rankings, as I recall. But they did, I was pleasantly surprised at that when I was reading.
Well, that's why I'm hoping it's not a
abnormality
of
No.
You getting good information.
No, numbers are right. That's why we make sure, you know, what, just a quick, so you understand the process. The custodian's record is the official record. So typically what we will do is that's the numbers you go with. Whatever you get from the custodian is what you have, right? But we also, every quarter, not just in your county, but everywhere, we get the manager's report too. So the manager sends us their data. They've got a checklist that we provide them, a worksheet that they provide us. So internally, what are their calculations? We compare that and their pricing, or we compare their returns to the custodian's data that we've then inputted into our performance measurement system. If there's a discrepancy there, we go back to the manager and say, we got a problem here. You need to find out where the problem is with your custodian. We'll look at it quickly, see if we can see it. But if we can't see it pretty readily, it's their job to reconcile with the custodian statements. Come back, let's figure out where the problem is. In your case, what's happened, your specific case, is that problem has been pretty consistent, and the custodian's data has been wrong, as we found out, and even the custodian has admitted it, but it sometimes takes several, I was going to say days, but in some cases weeks, for us to get that reconciliation done, and it really does take up a lot of people's time.
Well, I just
but it doesn't impact your, by the time we give you this report, it's accurate.
Well, the only reason I say that is because when everybody comes to Matt or myself, and what will start in the very near future again for another 3 years,
they won't come to me.
Well, they won't come to you again, you're right. But it took so long to get a contract in place last time, union-wise. Okay. They're fixing to start all that all over, because this one ends next year. So I just want to be able to look them in the eye and say, yeah, the information that you're getting is accurate.
Yeah, this is accurate.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm confident in that.
All right, and I didn't mean to interrupt.
Nope. Good question based on that. Back around. Page 6 is the asset allocation as of 12/31, and see we're a little overweighted in domestic equities, that helped us this last quarter, hurting us this quarter. I'm not going to recommend any rebalancing because, quite honestly, you've just been rebalanced quite a bit this quarter. We're probably down to 40% or so in domestic equities. We're underweighted in the infrastructure is the MLPs, and so I'm not going to recommend you add to it yet. We're underweighted in international, which I still think is probably uncomfortable underweighting there right now. They're having more trouble than we are. Real estate's kind of been a savior. We got into that asset class not too long ago, a couple years ago, and it's done very well. I'll show you some of those numbers in a second. All the managers are listed on page 7. I'll go through each of those maybe in a little bit more detail. Page 8 is your asset allocation dating back to 5 years ago, and we started diversifying the portfolio quite a bit I guess it's been a little over 4 years ago now that we introduced the convertibles to the portfolio. We wanted to keep or get the fixed income down a little bit. We didn't think bonds were going to provide much return. That's actually turned out to be true. Bonds did not provide, so every dollar that went into convertibles and every dollar that went into real estate would have been in bonds. We can say that was a good asset allocation call. The one that hasn't worked out, obviously, is the MLPs. And you can see that on page 9. If you look at the total returns on page 9, about three-fourths of the way down, you'll see the quarter was 3.2%. These are gross of fees, minus 0.2 for the year, 3.6 for the year for the last 2 years, and then you go to the 3-year and the 5-year, both of them slightly over 8%, and ahead of the target index, which is the line right below it. When you look at the 3-year column, for instance, the fixed income was 1% per year for the last 3 years, if you follow me on that 3-year column. If you go up that column, you'll see real estate was 13.1%, so again, any money that moved into real estate from there was good. Convertibles have given us almost 8, so to the extent that those asset classes helped us keep fixed income or move fixed income a little bit lower in the portfolio, that's been good. Where it's really hurt us is on the 1-year column, where you see fixed income at 0.9, and MLPs at minus 31.6, even 2 years, 2.3 to minus 13.6. So the MLPs, as we've talked about, and I was in here, have not worked out very well.
Are we fully in real estate now, or we still have money in the queue?
We're in, I believe, fully in. Yeah, with UBS and American. The rankings, page 10. And this BNY universe is a public fund universe of plans of all sizes, well up into the billions, about multi-billion dollar plans and plans down into low millions, 2 or 3 million, I think is maybe the lowest. You can see 36th percentile, that number means you're in the top 36% for the quarter, a little bit below average for the 1 year, and that's because we had lower fixed income allocation than most plans. 2 years, 36th percentile, 3 years now is the 21st percentile, and the 5 year number, as you pointed out, noticed, moved up to the 15th percentile. I don't know if I've always had this chart on page 11 in, but it just kind of, sometimes, especially if you're going into any kind of discussions with people about the plan, there's a lot of volatility in these markets and a lot of, too much TV covering the markets, but the bottom line on your plan, this was the growth of a dollar from December of 2010 up till December of 2015. That's your plan. Page 12 are the risk and rewards for the last 3 and 5 years, so not just the returns, but the risk. You're the blue triangle in each of these charts. And our goal is to be in that top left quadrant. That means you've taken a little, if you go further to the left you go, the less risk you've taken, and the higher up in the chart you go, the more return you've gotten. It's all relative to the benchmark, which is the red circle. We're kind of all over that benchmark, but we're trending a little bit towards the top left anyway. The standard deviation I would point out in these portfolios, this is all where the risk management come in and all the diversification we've tried to implement over the last few years to try and, that was all risk management oriented, to still try and help meet our actuarial assumption rate, but do it with as little risk as possible. And you can see that standard deviation column below the charts showing that we've actually been able to do that. Standard deviation is a measurement of volatility, risk, and you can see what the various asset classes, their standard deviation is. So kind of been fortunate to be able to get equity-like returns over the last 3 and 5 years with about 60% or less of the risk associated with equities. That's what diversification is supposed to do. And I'm sure you all know that from all those conferences you go to, sit in on all those workshops. Page 14 are your fiscal year returns going back several years. We're back in negative territory as we sit here today. Hopefully we can get something done before September. And then page 15 starts the managers. You heard from Kim on the large cap value. This has been, they've done a good job for you. The last year, even though the return was only 0.65%, you'll see the universe ranking in their peer group. They were in the top 12%. They took a slightly less risk in the market, almost, that's what a beta is, but it's about the same volatility. But outperformed the market for the year rather substantially, as you can see in the 1 year column right down below that. So there, as Kim pointed out, when they first got funded, it was the start of an extremely strong bull market. That was March of 2009. That was the bottom of the market. March 9th, I think, of 2009 was the bottom of the market. And so they lagged a little bit in that strong market, but make it up when the markets go the other way. And that so far, that seems to be holding true. And the 3 and 5 year numbers are above average. Sawgrass has struggled a little bit this last year, slightly under their benchmark. Growth was a really strong asset class, actually, the growth side of the large cap stocks. But they do have less risk, and they've beaten their benchmark over the 5 year period with a beta of only 0.86. So that's something we look at in terms of the risk return trade off there. So, and a good 5 year number of the top 16%. So, slipping a little bit relative to the peer group here recently, but still have some strong numbers longer term. Frontier, done an excellent job for you in their space, the pond that they fish in. They're on page 17, ranking in the top 13, top 11%. The MLPs are on page 18. I think we've talked about those enough.
The convertibles start on page 19, or on page 19, excuse me, that's Advent. Still like this space. I think it's a good, you know, less risky way to play the stock market, and that's how we treat them. But you get a little bit additional yield and less volatility than the stock market. International's on page 20. That's Euro Pacific. They continue to do a very good job for you, ranked in the top third. They do it with a very low risk, a risk structure. As you can see, their beta is pretty low there relative to other international managers, so we continue to like that group. American Realty then, your best performing asset classes for the last year, up 15.3%. That's on page 21, and now on page 22 is UBS. Not quite as strong a return, but a good absolute number. And your bonds, wrap it up with your bonds on page 23. There's not much difference between the top performers and the bottom performers in this kind of a bond market, and they've done at least so with less volatility than the market as a whole, so we're good with their bond portfolio. So no recommendations to make any rebalancing. You've already done a little bit of rebalancing without trying. And just need to get the markets turned around. I'll work on that. I'll work on that between now and May. Any questions, guys? Thanks.
All right, we're on to the administrative expenditures for 2014-15.
Let's see. The first page that I've given you here is the first column is what was adopted last year for 2014-15. The second column is the actual expenses. Disregard the last line there that says reserve for fund balance. That is something that budget carries over each year, so it doesn't exactly match. That's what they're projecting our balance will be. And the very last column is the balance of what the budget was, what was left from the budget that I did. Overall, we spent about $4.5 million in different expenditures. Some of that was for the retiree payments, the different managers that actually invoice us, the custodian, the actuary, legal, mine and Dale's expenses. The second page is actually a summary for the year of all of the different types of expenses. And then the top part is the revenue. Down at the bottom, it says your net, what the net loss was this year. And then the final two pages are actually broken down, the annual broken down monthly, so that you can see what the retiree payments are, how much the city contributes, how much the employees contribute, what each manager does invoice us. This actually needs board approval going forward for this year and then going forward. At the next meeting, I will have the actual budget for 16-17 for you to approve. Does anybody have any questions on any of the expenses?
Yeah, it needs to be filed with the city
clerk and posted on our website.
What? Alicia, why was the investment management fees? I thought, aren't those pretty straightforward, quarter to quarter, or do we just underestimate? Or what changed there?
Yes and no. With investment manager fees, Sawgrass bills us directly. They bill us on the two different accounts that we have. Theirs was, I underestimated what their fee would be. Let's see.
So that wasn't because of any of the changes that we did?
No, that's not any of the changes you did. My administrative agreement also went up. And I could have easily taken some money from here to put somewhere else. Usually if I need it in travel and training or legal, that's where I take it from. So that's probably why it's showing a negative. We also had Bank of New York, their invoicing was an issue. They hadn't invoiced us for the entire year 2014. Excuse me, when they finally did, it was April of 2015. So we more or less had expenditures for almost 2 years. Seven quarters anyways.
That shouldn't be a problem anymore.
Hopefully not going forward.
Is this something we need to make a motion on?
Yes, we do. You need to accept the expenses. I know it's after the fact, but that's kind of how...
The expenses, that's...
Yeah, they require... New legislation requires that you accept the budget and expenses.
See, and this is part of the problem with this, because Bank of New York screwed up. Mm-hmm. It's going on the website where people are going to look at it. Do we get to put explanation on there?
Mm-hmm. What's going on the website is actually the detailed information for the year.
You can put additional information online.
Mm-hmm. And then the month.
I guess what I'm saying is, I mean, because Bank of New York didn't bill us and we went over on one thing, it makes
right.
It look worse. Can there be an explanation put on the website when you're looking at this? This is because Bank of New York billed us for seven periods in this fiscal year because of their crappy billing practices.
Yes.
And this first page is just, that last column is just what we budgeted. We actually didn't go over in our entire budget, just on that line item.
Yeah, my point being, when certain people look at it, that's what they're going to play into. That we can't do a good budget, which is the intended purpose of some persons who proposed and backed this legislation that's requiring what we're sitting here discussing. Not to mention the unfunded.
Do we have the ability to put a footnote of any type on there and explain the statement?
Yes.
I mean, me personally, I would like some footnotes explaining some of the problems of why it looks like it does, because that's beyond our control. That's beyond this board's control. It's beyond the city's control. You know, and that's one of the reasons that somebody is getting, we're in the process of replacing somebody. I'm just saying, because I know there are going to be groups and or people that look at this as a negative thing, and they're going to want to beat that negative to death when it's an explainable negative that we had no control over.
As you said, those people who supported this requirement are hoping.
Because they want it to look bad.
Right.
We need a motion to accept the expenditure.
I would say with the caveat that the
expenditure. Right, if you're going to approve
I'm not posting the front page.
that's for you so that you see the budget.
Right, you're just posting monthly expenditures.
Yes.
No one's going to see that we're...
Nobody's going to see this front page. That's so that you can see what the budget is, so that at the next meeting, you will know why some of the amounts went up and why some of the amounts are going down. Now, refund of contributions, I miss that one every year.
Sure.
There's $64,000 left in there this year. I based it off of what we paid out last year. We didn't pay out near as much. Next year, I'll reduce this probably about $50,000 and I'll miss it.
Because that fluctuates year to year.
Yeah, that does fluctuate.
Well, I mean, even it, when you post this, it's posted just like what we're seeing right here.
Yes.
Okay, so you look at, you know, like general versus us, when you get to the Bank of New York one, that looks horrible.
Yes.
And that's why I'm saying I have a problem with that, because it was Bank of New York that did that to us.
Well, general had the same thing happen. So you're both being charged for the same number of months.
Yeah, but my point being, how many people are in general? 27,000 and 165 in ours, and we got a 43,000.
Yours is 43,000 because you're charged per trade through Sawgrass. And general does not have that transaction with managers.
That's not totally the billing problem, then. That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Right. The 43,000 difference from the 27 is actual fundamentals, not the negative 10,000 that's on the budget page.
And I'll make a motion that we accept the expenditure report. I'm not the chairman today, right? Never mind.
Entertain the motion, right?
I started, do I have to finish it, or can we revert to him, or what do we do?
You finish it, Mike.
Jay Gavel is yours.
I'm just a regular Joe. Well, then I will make a motion to accept the expenditure report.
A second motion.
Any discussion? Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Nice. First motion I've made in like 5 years. I'm one for one.
All right. Attorney's report.
Mike, did you say earlier you are either in negotiations now or about to go into negotiations?
They'll start negotiating if it goes true to form. They should start negotiating early next year, because we didn't pass this contract until we were more than a year into it. Mm-hmm. It's a 3-year contract. It goes through September 30th of next year. So I would suspect... And correct me if I'm wrong.
February,
March. So we're like at a 1-year window. So we got a shorter time frame this time because of the length that it took to get a contract done.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask is, we discussed before under that Senate Bill 172, we need to comply with that by the time the next contract is entered into. And it's two important things to keep in mind with respect to that in bargaining. The state money is going to be up for bargaining this year, and see if you can arrive at a mutual, what the statute calls mutual consent, basically agreement on what to do with excess state money.
Mutual consent during our negotiations is, we're going to do this or else we're going to impasse.
Now, a couple things about mutual consent. Number one, if you don't reach mutual consent, you'll be tossed into the default provision of the statute, under which roughly 50% goes to the city to reduce unfunded liability, and 50% for the benefit of the members. But if you're under the default, it's required that 50% go into a share plan.
Okay.
Which is basically a defined contribution arrangement.
But being that, this is where I guess you're going to earn your money this year, so to speak.
You mean like every other year?
Yeah, but I mean really, because if everything that I'm reading in this, the state money for the year that you got to consider it was way higher than what we are getting anyway, so that makes it basically default there, correct? Wasn't it the year that we, that they uses the baseline, we got like almost twice the money?
Well, it's amount over, basically, when Doug does our valuation report, he reports frozen amount, which is the amount up to which the state can use. Amounts above that are excess state monies. Also, if there's any past state money in reserve account, that is in play as well.
So how is that going to affect with what went into with this contract, where basically the things that we were using money to fund or partially fund have gone bye-bye?
Well, that's part of the frozen amount calculation.
Okay.
Although if money were set aside into a reserve account, I don't know, I have to look, but then that money is in play as well. If you go under default, half of that money goes to the city too. I don't know if you've got any money in reserve or not. Do you know if you
have? I don't think so.
No, okay. So that's just money's over the frozen amount. And it's important to keep in mind too, with respect to mutual consent, that if you do arrive at mutual consent, that should be a separate document from your CBA. If you do reach mutual consent, it will not expire with the expiration of your next contract. Mutual consent will remain in effect until when and if you arrive at another mutual consent. And along this time too, when the, as you know, when there's negotiations, the board acts as a resource, and if there's any questions, typically the actuaries involved, sometimes I am on the legal side, with board approval, we can be contacted by the bargaining parties. The other requirement of the statute that we'll have to meet is the requirement that we need to amend the share plan into our ordinance, irrespective of whether we ever fund it, ever plan to fund it, it's got to be in there. Now, a couple weeks ago, Keith Franklin rendered the opinion that all we need to do is put a reference in that we will have a share plan, and that if it's going to be funded at that time, we'll work out the specific provisions of the share plan, because no two share plans are alike. But we just don't want to not raise those issues, because we don't want to involuntarily be thrown into the default situation. So, just a reminder on that, and you can jot down a note for when you go into bargaining on that. And other news is really, this time around, it's good news. We're about halfway through the legislative session now. It started early this year. I don't remember it ever starting in January before. And we're about halfway through, 30 days into it now. We've got another 30 days to go, which takes us to the second week in March. And so far, there's been, unlike the past several years, no legislation introduced that would be adversely affecting us. Hopefully that will remain the case.
Yeah, we're getting a break after 6 years?
Yeah, so.
Must have found something to do other than go after the pensions, I guess.
Well, yeah, actually they're directing their attention at FRS this year, which is not going to apply to us, at least at this point. So,
so pass it on FRS and then use that as a blueprint for next year.
So,
well, that's the potential for whatever they do, I think, the FRS. Yeah.
Would you recommend then, going back to the previous topic with the going into negotiations and the whole share plan thing, that at, like, say the next year's February meeting, that the entire union negotiating team come to this meeting so they can ask questions of you and so forth, so
that
they can figure out where they need to go? Because I don't think, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if any of them really totally understand, from the questions I've been asked, I don't think anybody understands. I don't even totally understand how this is going to work or has to work.
Yeah, I think it'd be a good idea. Because the vision continues to come out with answers to some what are, to date, unanswered questions. just like a share plan issue. We don't have to have a complete share plan in there to meet the statutory requirement if we're not going to fund it. Also, there's, with respect to mutual consent, there's a lot of misunderstanding about the fact that that will not expire with the expiration of the CBA, that it remains in effect until there's a new mutual consent reached. So I think it's...
So you got to negotiate two things.
It's a good idea, Mike.
But that's something that's kind of separate, kind of sounding like than the rest of the things, because if it never expires, that could be something that hopefully could be negotiated separately and hopefully quickly, so...
But, and that negotiation would be between, well, as the CBAs are, but between the union and the city as the sponsor.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure anybody understands it at this point, because everything that they were going to do, you know, the webinars and all that, none of them have happened.
Because they don't have all the answers yet. And then the November conference that they had in Orlando, everybody anticipated getting all the answers there, and didn't, you know, it didn't happen. So... Yeah, I think that would be a good idea. Again, what we don't want to do is get defaulted into the default provision because no mutual consent was reached or share plan appropriated. So, yeah, and I think, too, it's interesting. You probably noticed the, Alicia, I'm sure you did, the state money checks were later this year. They typically come August. I think it was October, right, last year. And, you know, the reason, the division's just been overwhelmed with 172. And trying to answer all the questions, they don't have all the answers. And as you know as well, they're in management services, which is part of the governor's office. And it's my understanding there's been some interference there. So, with some things. So,
well, I've read it like 20 times. I still don't understand it. I mean, I've read it and reread it and reread it, and I'm still not completely getting it.
So that, and the only other thing is my annual reminder of your financial disclosures. The forms are out now, and you can file them anytime. And have proof of the filing. In any event, do it by July 1st.
Or September 1st.
Well, the statute provides that they need to be filed by July 1st. The purpose provides if you haven't filed by July 1st, you're supposed to get a notice from the supervisor of elections.
He does.
And
I do.
That's why he's so familiar with this, huh?
He knows all the
did you get filed by September 1st?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Last week, August. Actually, last year, August, I think I did it by, maybe in like July or something.
Why don't you just do it on time?
That is a good question.
You can't really shouldn't ask that question unless your MLP number.
How'd you know the rules?
Well, it's good to know your options.
You know when the fines start kicking in. That's what you know.
If I do it in July, then I don't get the nice certified letters in the mail.
Don't do it in August this year.
Because the fines do start around on September 1st.
Yeah.
This president election sends us an email of who has it turned theirs in.
Well, that's fine.
And then I start calling with another deadline.
I just forget.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it's been a year gone by. This is effective January 1st, 2001. I don't think it's been a year gone by, the fines and everything, that I haven't encountered multiple trustees who have been hit with the fine.
Our supervisors on election
$1,500
is pretty good.
It's pretty good.
It's 15.
They email us.
Yeah, it's $25 a day starting on September 1st, and then it gets $1,500, and you get a bill.
Oh, my goodness.
And thank you for your volunteer service.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And about 3 years ago, the Ethics Commission filed civil suits against everybody that had unpaid fines to collect the fines.
Well, as long as the clerk's office doesn't do what they did last year, where they told Wesley Wilcox to mail everybody's form here, and then I never got mine.
Right.
Well, it's posted directly to you.
Well,
yeah.
But the city took it upon themselves and said, just give them to us and we'll make sure everybody gets them.
Mm-hmm. They didn't.
And then they didn't. And I fixed mine, but I couldn't fix it for anybody else. I told them, I don't care what the city says, mail it to me.
Yeah, I think I just got one at some budget election.
You definitely don't want to get hit with a fine. That's it.
All right. Other matters?
I have a question for Larry. The conversion of Bank of New York to Wells. I mean, we said before we needed about 45 days. We got the contract that Mike has signed. Matt's, I'm sure, going to sign it today, and Lee will get it sent out. What do we need to do? I know we have a 30-day termination for Bank of New York, according to our contract, and I'm not sure what we need to do to make this conversion happen.
I have been in contact with Carl, and we've started some of the background work where he's got a list of the managers, how many accounts we will need, contact information for all of the managers. He's got our W-9 and some other information, the plan documents. So we've started some of the background back-end work so that Wells is ready to go when we are.
Can you shepherd this through, Larry, or assist with it?
Define shepherd. I brought Carla in on this because she's the expert on it. So I know Carla was saying at least 45 days. And if I could get back to you maybe, Dale, because I do want to check with her, because we're also going through a system conversion ourselves right now, and Jennifer, as you know, is no longer there, so we're also training a new employee. So we're kind of pressed this quarter ourselves, so I don't think so, but we're very involved. I don't think we have to get very involved in it, and we can get the motion going. Whether or not it can be done by April 1st, I don't know. But Carla's not directly involved in the system conversion, so she can assist. So
okay.
I think we can probably shoot for April 1st, but if I could maybe get back to you, we might have to push it to May 1st.
Next time?
Yeah. She would be the one I'd want to answer that, I guess.
I don't know if you will discuss it or will discuss it, but part of the procedure that's utilized a lot, because there's going to be two 1099s rather than just one, is to notify everybody that they're going to be getting it from a different place and they'll be getting two.
We do the payments from here, so I produce them for everybody.
All payments?
Mm-hmm. Yep. We still do all payments in-house.
That's the longest part of that conversion.
Well, yeah, that's why I think April 1st
is probably pretty reasonable. It's just assets that are going to have to move.
Yeah. It's the assets.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. The problem will be accounting for it. Right.
Right.
It will. It will be reconciling the Bank of New York.
It'll be reconciling the Bank of New York. All of our accounts payable, retiree checks, they all run through SunTrust, and none of that's going to change.
Okay. I don't think there's any reason. You know, you've only got about, I forget what the number is, but it's about 60 or 70% of the assets are actually custody there,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we've got commingled funds with Kim.
Right.
And the real estate funds are commingled.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not custody there. Euro Pacific's not custody there. So I don't think it'd be a problem. But let me get with her, have her get with you, but we'll kind of shoot,
okay.
tentatively shoot for April 1st. We run into problems, but I think we can get it down.
And like I said, the bank has the names of all the managers. They're setting up, you know, giving me a hopefully consistent account numbers and that kind of thing going.
Well, I mean, I gave you that updated list mm-hmm. of all our consultants a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I knew you were in contact with them. So
and I think
we were just trying to do whatever we could in the background to
yeah,
be
good.
Ready to
that's
go when the...
And I'll send the contracts out to Wells Fargo and instruct them to return them to Dale or Alicia.
Either one. It doesn't matter.
Preference?
Probably to me.
Okay.
So we have the contracts now?
Yeah.
For, so are they approved yet by this board?
Yes.
Yeah, they were. Okay. Now they go to Wells Fargo for Wells Fargo
okay.
to sign.
Okay. Yeah, I think we should. I'll have Carla. Have you spoken to Carla? Has Carla spoken to you at all, Alicia? Or,
no.
Okay.
We'll
get with you.
I shot an email to Carl and said, you know, what can we do in preparation? I've got a general letter together for the managers to let them know. You know, this is space where our wire and new wire instructions will go.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
I don't think it's going to be that.
Mm-mm.
Other than
getting good data, I don't think it's going to be that difficult. If we hear them.
We had a little fun with Carla last time, Larry. She,
I got this.
Was late.
Yes, she said, so that they know who's on the
line. Yeah, I was here. She came in like she went to the wrong place. We really wanted to charge that.
Oh, no.
Doing this like 35 years.
Are you sure you know how to do this?
How funny.
Yeah, that's the problem. She had been here before. She still went to the wrong place.
I'm sure I'm updating the records.
And the only other thing I know of, just for the board's information, the ordinance amendment is on the agenda for March 1st. And that's the one that incorporates the changes brought about by the collective bargaining agreement and also enacts those other changes that you've been talking about, Paul. So it's set for first reading. Doug Lozen told me we would have an impact statement on it this week.
Anything else? All right. We'll close the meeting. The time is now 2:53.
Kim, when you had mentioned earlier